This is the B-side of the lecture for March 1997. The title is Malachi and Modern Times. We read in the book of Malachi at the very introduction the state of affairs that was happening in Jerusalem and in Judea some 60 or 70 years after the time of Zerubbabel and Joshua the high priest, or after the time that Haggai and Zechariah did their prophesyings. We find that the same thing was occurring in the time of Malachi as was occurring back at that earlier period. The Jews were expecting much. That's what Haggai said. They felt they were getting very little. God came back and, however, told them, "It's because you should consider your ways, not mine. And if you will rebuild the temple, if you will lay the foundation stone, on the ninth month of the 24th day of the month, the very day that you do that, I will begin to bless you." And Zerubbabel, who is the prince of Israel, will be the finisher of this temple. And it'll be his signet that does it. Now, when Haggai gave that prophecy, the Jews automatically began to say, well, from the ninth day of the month of Kislev, the 24th day of the ninth month, I should say, the ninth month being Kislev, which always occurs near our December, that they would be blessed. And that's what it says. Well, then 2 months later, after that, to the very day, Zechariah commences his prophecies. And in there, he begins to interpret what Haggai actually meant. Because in that two-month period, the Jews weren't experiencing prosperity. They weren't. Now, you might say, did God fail in his prophecies? Zechariah is saying, no, he did not. So he spends the rest of the eighth chapters, the first eight chapters, which deal with the Zechariah prophecies, and as I explained in my lecture on Zechariah, chapters 9, 10, 11, 12, 13, and 14 were actually written by Jeremiah 100 or so years before and tacked on to Zechariah. But anyway, Zechariah was explaining what Haggai actually meant, that there was a time in the future when a Jerusalem would be built up, when a new temple would arrive, which would have glory indeed associated with it. There would be a time in the future when men and boys and girls and children all would be in the city of Jerusalem without walls and everything happy and joyful, when a man by the name of the Branch would come along and take sin away from Israel and the world, and the sin would be taken out in one day's time, which is most remarkable. And then he goes on to say there's coming a time in the future when God will send a spirit of grace and supplication upon the inhabitants of Jerusalem, and they will accept the one that they pierced. Well, the one that they pierced was Jesus Christ. That's a prophecy that hadn't even happened yet, you see. So we find these prophecies were for a future time, certain events to take place in the time that Jesus was here, and most of the events to take place just prior to his second coming, his second advent to this world, and with his coming back to this earth. That is what Zechariah is showing. It's a Jerusalem in the future. It is a temple in the future. It is a Zerubbabel in the future. It's a Joshua the high priest in the future, who will be with the Branch, who will take away sin, who will cleanse the land of its idolatry and all of that. So that is what we find. Now, during this interim period, instead of being blessed, the Israelites looked around them, the Jews did, and they said, we were still being cursed. Now, Malachi comes along some 60 or 70 years after Haggai, after the foundation stone had been laid. And they were still in difficulty. In fact, they were getting lackadaisical over it and having troubles with God over the whole matter. And that's when Malachi comes along. Now, Malachi, according to the Jews, is a title. It's not the man's name. Malachi means my messenger. It was actually applied to John the Baptist later on as the messenger of God. So it's a title. Anyone who is a messenger of God is called a Malachi. It's like an angel is a melech or a king. Anyone who is a messenger from God can be called a Malachi. So who is this Malachi? Jewish tradition has it. And you can find this in Josephus, and I firmly believe it to be the case, that Malachi was a title for the priest Ezra, who put together the Old Testament. He was the one who put it all together for us, and he had the right to be the last of the prophets of the Old Testament. And the last thing he says in Malachi is to look forward to an Elijah to come in the future. Zechariah said, look forward to a Zerubbabel to come, a Joshua the high priest to come, two witnesses to come. And Malachi says, look for Elijah to come. Now, in Jesus' time, Jesus said John the Baptist was a type of that Elijah. But he also said in Matthew 17, Elijah yet is to come in the future. Because this Elijah will come before the great and terrible day of the Lord. The book of Malachi has to do with our end time. But it's solidly based within the environment of Jerusalem and Judea in the fourth or the early part, last part of the fifth century B.C. Some 60 or 70 years after Haggai and Zechariah flourished, so we can get the time period. And even at that time period there, they were still not being blessed physically, economically, like they thought they should be. In fact, you know what Malachi starts out with, or let's say Ezra, in this prophecy? Look at it here. The burden of the word of the Lord to Israel by Malachi. Now here it is. I have loved you, saith the Lord. That's what he starts out with. And then the next statement is, but you say, wherein has you loved us? Just in that attitude. Then he says, was not Esau Jacob's brother, saith the Lord? Yet I loved Jacob. I hated Esau, says the Lord, and laid his mountains and his heritage waste for the dragons of the wilderness. And you know, the land of Esau, Edom, had been laid waste. It's down in the southeastern part of Palestine and over in the area toward Petra. He says, whereas Edom said, this was Jacob's twin brother, we are impoverished, but we will return and build the desolate places. Thus saith the Lord of hosts, they shall build, but I will throw down. They shall call them the border of wickedness, and the people against whom the Lord hath indignation forever. Now look at verse 5. And your eyes shall see, you Israelites, and you shall say, the Lord will be magnified from the border of Israel. Now you have the border of Edom, which is next to the border of Israel. They border one another. And what he is saying here is this. I've laid waste the land of Edom, and you can go down there and see it. The time is coming, he says, that you're going to be so blessed that once you pass that border from Edom into Israel, it's going to be from desolation into utter prosperity. That's what he means. The time is coming. But they say, well, it's certainly not happening now. And he agreed. Malachi agreed. It certainly was not happening at that time. You know, we even have circumstances like that to this very day. Now, we have borders here in the United States that on one side of the border, let's say the United States is one, on the other side is Mexico. Nothing wrong with Mexico, but they do not have the economy that we have. And you know, you can go right along the border there and you can find on one side one type of condition and right on the other side just absolutely something different. That is what he means here. But even more so than modern times that you could think about any modern countries and all of that. We find that he is trying to say here, you can see waste desolation in Edom. And I'll tell you, from the very border, the time is coming that you pass into Israel, it's going to be prosperity and blessing. That time is coming. Now that's what he starts out with. But you know what the Jews say to Malachi? Well, they go on and say, it's sure not happening with us. Going on here in chapter 1, verse 6, a son honors his father, God says, a servant his master. If then I be a father, where is mine honor? And if I be a master, where is my fear? Saith the Lord of hosts unto you, O priests, that despise my name. Now he centers in on the leaders of the nation of Israel, the nation of the Jews. Malachi, by the way, was Ezra, who was a priest. And he said that the priests were not leading the common people properly. So this teaching here is to religious leaders. Get that in mind. Religious leaders back at that time, and it'll be religious leaders in our time too. Going on, you offer polluted bread upon mine altar, and you say, wherein have we polluted you? In that you say, the table of the Lord is contemptible. The altar was like a table that you eat from. In fact, the altar was God's table in his home. It's symbolically of a table where you sit around and eat food. The evening sacrifice, the morning sacrifice. Morning sacrifice is breakfast. Evening sacrifice is supper, okay? That's the way it was supposed to be, on a table. The altar was a table. and they were offering polluted animals on that table. Going on in verse 8. And if you offer the blind for sacrifice, is that not evil? All sacrificial animals had to be without blemish, you understand, according to God. If you offer the lame and the sick, is that not evil? Offer it now unto your governor, the Persian governor. Will he be pleased with you or accept your person, say the Lord of hosts? Go ahead and offer it to him and see what he thinks. Now, you don't mind offering it to me, but offer it to the Persian governor and see how far you get. That's what he says. And now I pray you, beseech God, that he will be gracious unto us. This hath been by your means. Will he regard your persons just simply because you're priests and religious leaders? Saith the Lord of hosts, who is there even among you that would shut the doors for naught, for nothing? Neither do you kindle fire on my altar for nothing. In other words, they had to be paid for everything. Oh, we have to be paid to eat, I know that. But you know, they wouldn't do anything unless they were paid for it, on all circumstances. I have no pleasure in you, saith the Lord of hosts, neither will I accept an offering at your hand. For, he says in verse 11, the time is coming, from the rising of the sun even to the going down of the same, my name shall be great among the Gentiles. And in every place incense shall be offered unto my name, and a pure offering for my name shall be great among the heathen, saith the Lord of hosts. The heathen are going to do it one of these days, and what do? You offer me the lame, the blind, and the so forth. And you know what they say to him? Well, you haven't prospered us. If you'd prosper us, we'd give you the best. Now that's what it goes on and says here. And it's true. God had not prospered them the way they wanted. It says, verse 12, but you have profaned it, that is the altar, in that you say the table of the Lord is polluted, the fruit thereof, even his meat, is contemptible. They admitted it. You say, behold, what a weariness is it? Why are you worried about it, God? And you have snuffed at it. He goes on to say, but you have snuffed at my indignation. You brought that which was torn, lame, sick. Thus you brought an offering. Should I accept this from your hand, saith the Lord? But cursed be the deceiver, which hath in his flock a male, and vows and sacrifices unto the Lord a corrupt thing. For I am a great king, saith the Lord of hosts, and my name is dreadful among the heathen. And he went on to say, what he's saying is, I deserve to be respected, and you're not respecting me. Now the priests, though, were saying, well, you have not brought us blessings. If you bring us blessings, we'll give you back blessings. And God was saying, you give me what I deserve, no matter what. Now that is what the attitude of God is on all of this. Chapter 2. And now, O you priests, this commandment is for you. And it went specifically to the religious leaders. You might apply it today to some religious leaders. You can apply it to anybody, even me, if you want to. You know, I hope I don't put polluted bread on the table. I hope I don't. I'm trying not to. I'm trying to give the pure truth of God. If I don't give the pure truth, well, I just fit right in with these guys. I'm trying to give it as best I know how. But anyway, I'm not perfect, and I know lots of others trying to do it too, so I'm, they're not perfect either. But if people just, in their minds, make up their minds, they're going to go ahead and do what they want to, then this commandment is for them. That's what it says. Oh, now, O you priests, this commandment is for you. If you will not hear, if you will not lay it to heart, to give glory unto my name, saith the Lord of hosts, I will even send a curse upon you. I will curse your blessings. Yea, I have cursed them already because you do not lay it to heart. And I'll tell you what their blessings were tithes. Tithes and offerings. That's what the priest wanted. He says, I'm going to curse them. Now, if you'll go back here to Zechariah, written about 60 to 70 years before, he says, a time is coming when a spirit of grace and supplication is going to be sent to the people of Israel. They're going to repent. They're going to accept the one that they pierced. And people, they're going to get idolatry out of the land. And they're going to get the false prophet out of the land. And the people who were living before that time, who were priests and prophets, and not telling the truth, they're going to be so contemptible in the eyes of the people that they will answer when, weren't you a priest at one time? They're going to say, oh no, I'm just a farmer. Now that's in Zechariah chapter 12 and 13. The same thing is being uttered here as far as God is concerned. He says, I'm going to take away your tithes and offerings. Now just get that's what he means to the priest. I'm going to take away your blessings. Behold, I will It says corrupt in the King James. I will reprove is what it means. I will reprove your seed. Spread dung upon your faces, even the dung of your solemn feasts. Oh, yes, they had the feast all right, but they were doing the wrong thing at the feast, you see. And one shall take you away with it, and you shall know that I have sent this commandment unto you, that my covenant might be with Levi. That was their father, you see. He made a covenant with Levi, that Levi should be a proper priest. And Moses was of Levi, Aaron was of Levi, and they were. And Levi was proper, one of the tribes of Israel. I made a covenant, saith the Lord, and these priests were their Levi's descendants. My covenant was with him, Levi, of life and peace. That means goodness and prosperity. I gave them life and peace to him for the fear wherewith he feared me and was afraid before my name. The law of truth was in his mouth, Levi's mouth, their father's mouth. Iniquity was not found in his lips. He walked with me in peace and equity and did turn many away from iniquity. For the priest's lips should keep knowledge, and they should seek the law of his mouth. For he is a messenger of the Lord of hosts. Messenger. See Malachi here? Ezra is a priest. He's a messenger from God. And you find his name right here. He's a messenger. So Malachi is coming out. These names have meaning to them. And the significance of the prophecy also has to do with the meaning of the name. But you priests, are departed out of the way. You have caused many to stumble at the law. You have corrupted the covenant of Levi, saith the Lord of hosts. Therefore have I made you contemptible and base before all the people. Now I'm going to tell you this. This is a prophecy not only of back there, but it's for the near future coming up. Many of these priests and ministers today, I'm just going to be plain, know the truth. They have knowledge. And I've talked to them, they've told me they have the truth and the knowledge. Some of them are saying to me and to my wife on many occasions that they have the truth, but they won't teach it. Well, I'll tell you, they're going to be held in contempt pretty soon. And the contempt is not only going to come from God, it's going to come from the ordinary people. And the people are going to turn away from them. Now, this is a prophecy for the end time, when you really get down to it, because he is going to cause them to be contemptible. According as you have not kept my ways, but you have been partial in the law. Have we not all one Father? Hath not one God created us? That's what they say. We're all the same, you see. He said, no, you've been partial. You've been partial. Why do we deal treacherously, every man against his brother, profaning the covenant of our fathers? In other words, they were having party spirit. The priests were better than anybody else, you see. In other words, the ministers were better. Well, the time is coming when they're going to be in contempt because they're not keeping the law and they're offering polluted bread on the altar. They're not giving the complete truth. That's what he's saying, the truth of God. Judah hath dealt treacherously, that is, the nation of Judah. And an abomination is committed in Israel and in Jerusalem. For Judah hath profaned the holiness of the Lord, which he loved, and hath married the daughter of a strange god. It goes on to say here, if you read Nehemiah, many of the Jews at that time had married into the Gentiles. They had gone and married Gentile women, and the women had brought their deities and gods right in to the family. And it says here, the Lord will cut off the man that does this. The master, that means the top man of the layman, the scholar, that means the top one in our university today, or him that offers an offering, the priest. All of them have been caught up in this. And this have you done again, covering the altar of the Lord with tears and with weeping. You know who's been weeping on the altar? The women that these men had left to marry these others and divorce them. And the women are coming destitute to the altar and crying, saying, God help me. It goes on to say here, they were violating a covenant. In this particular case, it was the marriage covenant. Verse 14, but you say, wherefore? Why are you upset, God? Because the Lord hath been witness between you and the wife of your youth, against whom you have dealt treacherously, yet is she your companion and the wife of thy covenant. Many of these men, as you'll read in Nehemiah, had given up their Jewish wives, and they had taken up with Gentile wives. Many of them had. And the Jewish wives were left, in that time in the society, were left destitute. And that's what he's talking about. Did he not make one, that is one flesh, Adam and Eve, one flesh? What's it say in the New Testament? One flesh. Two people married or one. Yet had he the residue or the excellency of the Spirit and whereof one. Why did he make two, a man and a woman, to be one? That he might seek a godly seed. Therefore take heed to your spirit. Let none deal treacherously against the wife of his youth. For the Lord your God, the God of Israel, saith that he hates putting away, that is, through divorce. Sure he does. Now, it doesn't mean divorce is wrong on some occasions. But you know, if you just put away for no reason except flippancy, that is wrong. For one covers violence with a garment, saith the Lord. Therefore, take heed to your spirit, and you deal not treacherously. You have wearied the Lord with your words, you masters, you priests, you scholars. That's what he means. Well, then they answer, well, how have we wearied him? When you say, everyone that does evil is good in the sight of the Lord, and he delights in them, or where is the God of judgment? Okay, now here is chapter 3. Behold, I will send my messenger. You see, Malachi means my messenger. And he shall prepare the way before me, and the Lord whom you seek shall suddenly come to his temple, even the messenger of the covenant whom you delight in. Behold, he shall come, saith the Lord of hosts. Now he's going to come, and you delight in him. You've been telling people he's going to come. Now, all right, this Lord is going to come, and you've been seeking him out. But he's the messenger of the covenant, this covenant that you're denying. He's that kind of a messenger. Now he's going to come, and you've been wanting him to come. Do you know this was applied in the New Testament to John the Baptist? He was the messenger to come to prepare the way of the Lord. But there's also coming a John the Baptist in the future called an Elijah. I haven't got to that verse right there at the last part of Malachi yet. An Elijah is coming in the future. He's my messenger. And when he comes, he's coming with power. Now, you seek him out and you want him, don't you? That's what he's saying here. Now, look at verse 2. But who may abide the day of his coming? And who shall stand when he appears? For he is like a finer's fire and like fuller's soap. He shall sit as a refiner and purifier of silver. He shall purify the sons of Levi. He shall purge them as gold and silver, that they may offer unto the Lord an offering in righteousness this time, and not pollution. Then shall the offering of Judah and Jerusalem be pleasant unto the Lord, as the days of old, in the former years. I will come near to you with judgment. I will be a swift witness against the sorcerers, against the adulterers, against the false swearers, against those that oppress the hireling in his wages, the widow and the fatherless, and that turn aside the stranger from the right, who fear not me, saith the Lord of hosts. For I am the Lord, I change not, therefore you sons of Jacob are not consumed, that is, the ones that were being consumed by the priest. I'm coming on your favor, he says, to the laity, to the people who need the help. Even from the days of your fathers you've gone away from mine ordinances and have not kept them. Return unto me, and I will return unto you, saith the Lord. But you say, how do we return? They still don't get the point. Will a man rob God? Yet you've robbed me. But you say, wherein have we robbed you? In tithes and offerings you are cursed with a curse, for you have robbed me, even this whole nation. You know, the people of Israel were required to pay tithes to those priests. You are not Israelites today. You're not required to pay tithes like it is here. But they were required to, and this whole nation wasn't giving them. He said, if you start giving your tithes and your offerings, he goes on here saying, I'm going to start blessing you. But if you don't keep my laws and my ways, he's talking to Israel here. I hope you understand. He's not talking to Christians. He's talking to Israelites. He's talking to people who are priests. He's talking about the nation of Israel, and it is at the end of the age. But he is saying here, your words have wearied me. In fact, verse 13, your words have been stout against me, saith the Lord. Yet you say, what have we spoken so much against you? They still don't get the point. So here's what happens. He goes on to say that a time is coming when the proud and the wicked are going to be judged. He says in verse 16, there's going to be a little remnant, though, of people. And they that feared the Lord spake often one to another, and the Lord hearkened and heard it, and a book of remembrance was written before him for them that feared the Lord, and that brought that thought upon his name. They shall be mine, saith the Lord of hosts, in the day when I make up my jewels in his crown. I will spare them as a man spares his own son that serves him. Then shall you return and discern between the righteous and the wicked, between him that serves God and him that serves not. And then in conclusion he says, For behold, the day of the Lord comes, for the day comes, that shall burn as an oven. All the proud, yea, and all that do wickedly, shall be stubble. The day that comes shall burn them up, saith the Lord of hosts, and it shall not leave them neither root nor branch. Now that is a judgment upon Israel for those that do wicked. But unto you that fear my name shall the sun, S-U-N, like the sun in the sky, of righteousness shall arise with healing in his wings, and you shall go forth and grow up as the calves of the stall. You shall tread down the wicked, and they shall be ashes under your soles of your feet in the day that I shall do these things. Now here's the conclusion. Remember you the law of Moses my servant, which I commanded him in Horeb, that's Mount Sinai, for all Israel, with the statutes. Behold, I send you Elijah the prophet before the coming and great and dreadful day of the Lord. He shall turn the hearts of the fathers to the children, and the heart of the children to the fathers, lest I come and smite the earth with a curse. The children are going to be teaching the fathers at the end. Not the fathers, the children, the fathers. Elijah is coming at the end of the age, my messenger, who is going to purify Israel, going to purify the priesthood, going to purify the ministry. And though the ministry at the end of the age will be corrupt, and it says contemptible in the eyes of the people, God is going to send a purifying fire through this Elijah, who will purify them, and there will be a remnant of people that will make up the jewels in God's crown when the Son of Righteousness is extolled in their hearts. Malachi ends the book of the prophets. He ends for Israel by saying, repent of your ways, look up, because soon Elijah is coming. This concludes the B-side of the lecture for March 1997, Malachi and Modern Times.